Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks,
welcome to another edition.
Is that right?
I'm your host, Virtual Willie, and I'd like to thank you for spending some time with me today. It's been a very, very, very long year. And as I time. Our media has been frankly, distracting for the class, or you can't distract. You guys read the entry to this show, because this is sort of what I want to move on. Decide you want something else. So, welcome aboard. My blog, or rather the blast that I sent out today, said as follows: it is not difficult to get frustrated with the mainstream media, even though we all know how shallow their coverage is. Case in point was this week's newest scandal. Scandals again, buddies. It was leaked that government is collecting information on our telephone calls and other communications. Tapped phones, scanned emails, really? 707, I just saw you popped up. If you pop back in, I'll bring you on in. This story broke, and all the copycat networks picked it up. What is funny is that this was reported in 2006 in an extensive article by Leslie Cawley, and I think it was in the USA, titled NSA Has Massive Database of American Phone Calls. I have an hypothesis. Many on the professional left and the professional right have allowed themselves to be pawns of the American plutocracy. And by the way, folks, I'm actually reading the blast that I sent out, because this is sort of the flavor that I want, unless you guys want something else. I have spoken before about most politicians being empty vessels to be filled. An unfulfilled middle class can become a reactionary middle class. Whichever politician those allowed themselves to be filled with the burgeoning middle class movement will put the plutocracy at risk. And for those who got my blast, I kind of fixed it up early today when I just woke up, didn't get it done last night. So there's a little typo in there, forgive me. The administration, after dancing to appease the plutocracy during the first term, has been making subtle moves that would make one wonder if a real middle-class-centric attack is coming for 2014, that if successful, could codify a real middle-class-centric state. Using false scandals to scuttle work on the plan may just be at work. So folks, please call in to the discourse civilly. The telephone number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. If you want to speak, press 1 and I'll get a notification. Right now I see that we have some calls on the board, but no hands are up. So until a hand come up, I'll move to the first blog, my first reading, if you will. But before I get there, what do you really think is going on, folks? How comes all these quote-unquote scandals are just popping up now? What's the real reason behind it? I have two blogs that from this week. Actually, I have several, but there are two of them that that comes to mind. One may seem off topic, but it isn't. And the other one is about scandals. What is the real scandal? And what I think I'm going to do is start out with the one from Chris Olney. I used to do a whole, I still do iReporting with CNN, what it is, citizen journalism, and they've carried quite a few of my pieces. And but lately, I noticed they hadn't been carrying a whole lot of pieces, so we kind of toned down on the things that we've done at CNN. My good buddy, fellow reporter, Chris Cliff Olney, he wrote a piece called, what was it called? I think he called it Privatization is America's Path to Poverty. No, no, that was my title. I picked up on one of the reports that he gave, and I wish I could play his report, but right now I don't have the links tied into my mixer here to play the sound. So what I'm going to do is read that blog, and it goes as follows. The title of the blog is Privatization is America's Path to Poverty and Indentured Servitude, and it goes as follows. CNN iReporter and political commentator Cliff Olney puts the aim of the right and the Republican Party's zeal for a constancy of privatization, government little by little, into real-world perspective. He decided to bring to the forefront a story that goes under the radar, but that is happening throughout the country. Mr. Olney tells the story of Pennsylvania's effort to privatize their liquor stores. Before I go any further, I know it's liquor stores we're talking about here, but this applies to just about everything that the government has its hands in, liquor or otherwise. And the reason I stopped here is somebody sent me an email saying, Egberto, my God, everything in that blog is true, but my God, did you have to use a liquor store? There are many better examples to give than to use a liquor store. Well, it so happened, Cliff Olney talked about the liquor store. Anyhow, continuing the blog, it goes as follows. Mr. Olney tells the story of Pennsylvania's effort to privatize their liquor stores. This is a story that is being repeated throughout the country with little fanfare from the mainstream media. Prisons are being privatized. Services are being privatized that ultimately use foreign labor indirectly as American workers are commoditized. It is, however, something that the taxpayers have the right to know. Taxpayers must be informed that their government is being sold to private profiteers under their noses and that they will ultimately pay the price. Cliff Olney says in the video below, and here's Cliff Olney's words, those people that were working at those liquor stores were making livable wages. They had benefits, but of course he feels that privatization is the best route, as does our country. These 5,000 workers that were able to make a decent living working at a state-owned liquor store selling liquor now won't be able to. Those stores are going to be taken over by the private industry, who will offer nothing as far as their benefits and low wages that are barely livable. This is the direction that our country continues to go. Men in Pennsylvania are, and this is back to me now, men in Pennsylvania are voicing their position as well. Newsworks Report, it's a newspaper in Pennsylvania. Black clergy of Philadelphia and vicinity also is concerned about the loss of jobs at the state-owned stores. The group joins Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the Pennsylvania NAACP, and others in opposing the plan. The group's announcement comes as the State House and Senate begin outlining their 2014 budget proposals. When it was apparent that privatization was a distinct possibility and not just talk, even more interest reacted. The Liquor Store Real Estate Owners Association is the latest opponent to liquor privatization. The group is comprised of property owners who have leased agreements with the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. Among their ranks is David Neal, a Philadelphia real estate owner and who owns a property for the state-owned wine and spirit shop in Southwest Street. His lease, like all others in the state store system, has a termination clause, one without any penalties if the agreement ends. This generally is not a concern because the state is a reliable tenant. You doubt that the Liquor Control Board is going to go out of business and people are going to buy alcohol, Neil said. When times are good, people drink. When times are bad, people drink. I don't know if that's a good step, but anyway, that's what he says. But when Neil heard news of the plan to get government out of the liquor business and saw the House of Representatives successfully vote to privatize, that termination clause could suddenly make or break his bottom line. So Neil and several other liquor store owners started the association, sent out mail-ins, launched a website, and effectively joined the special interest cavalcade in the privatization debate. Groups like beer distributors, unionized liquor store employees, public safety advocates like Mothers Against Driving, and business interests have had their say in public hearings and other events, but the folks LCB leases space from were not in the loop, at least not at the outset. Back to the blog. There are many reasons why privatizing Pennsylvania's liquor stores would be disruptive and counterproductive. It is evident the goal of private companies will be to increase the sale of liquor to maximize profits. This will undoubtedly increase alcoholism. The alcoholism would become a feeder into private drug rehab hospitals. Not far behind would be chronic alcohol offenders feeding into, guess what, prison systems that are either privatized, run privately, or being lobbied to be run privately. It is also clear that whereas government jobs come with good benefits and good wages, the incremental efficiency these private companies get would be on the backs of the workers in the form of lower wages, benefits, and security. In other words, the state will trade a positive economy that results from living wage employees that spend, as well as liquor profits in return for meager licensing income that enables profits of the sale to go to a select few shareholders of private companies. This is the classic case of the pilfering of the middle class, folks, that is occurring throughout this nation. They are attempting to privatize the post office, which was covered in the story that I did called Postal Services Woes Manufactured by Congress at the Behest of Corporate Greed. Just scan the website for that. From call centers being privatized and taken overseas to private health insurance companies skimming profits from Medicare, the privatization of government services is nothing more than a few finding a legal avenue to steal tax dollars. It's interesting because I wrote here as an update. A reader of the blog wrote the following message. Importance of this subject dictates an update. And this is what he said. He said, the book Ill Fares the Land by historian Ashton Judd contains a chapter providing a very clear explanation of why privatization always, not sometimes, always results in poorer services and higher prices and never delivers the promised benefits of increased competition because there is no increased competition. The economic explanation is backed up with decades of experience with privatized programs. Not one of them has ever delivered on its promises. This is why we engage, folks. This is why we educate ourselves, folks. This is why together we get these types of information so that when we enter the debate, we can enter the debate from a position of knowledge and not hype. But it is imperative that we also put all this information in our different spheres of influence. What are your spheres of influence, folks? You're a lot more influential than you think. I can tell you all the folks that listen to my show, you've influenced me because of your fact you've listened, engaged, given other points of views, have served a purpose, and always a positive purpose. Folks, the telephone number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. Press 1 to speak. Want to hear your points of view? I don't get a call in the next few seconds. I'm going to the second blog, and that one is going to be, it seems like I, before I get to that blog, I have a 518. 518, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Egberto, Joe Pomponio, Albany, New York. Good to be back.
Senor Pomponio, and welcome back. How are you doing, my friend?
Oh, please. I want to stay with the topics on the program. Let's just sum it up to say the health is getting better, and eventually the government's going to start giving me my pension. Other than that, I got caught up in a scandal thing myself. And
you did?
Not caught up in it. Caught up in the way it's being reported. I guess I worded that a little wrong. When I read the blog and everything, I've kind of come back this week. Maybe this is one of the things that snapped me out about it. How familiar do you think your average citizen voter is with regard to the Patriot Act?
Let me put it from my point of view. I've read parts of it, but I consider myself very uninformed on the totality of the Patriot Act. Okay, I'll confess that to all you listeners. I consider myself fairly uninformed of the totality that Patriot Act is, and I think I'm uninformed on the safe side, which means I think that Patriot Act gives the executive a hell of a lot more power than any of us believe.
Not only do I agree with you, I spent some time in Paris in 2003, and I had the pleasure of having a conversation with a local policeman there. They were all up in arms about being vilified by the then administration with the French fries and all this nonsense.
Right.
And he pointed things out to me. I don't want to go into great detail. I downloaded. In general, it basically is Mein Kampf, pardon me for using that expression. Warrantless searches, there are things that are going to come out, I think, that if you think phone numbers are bad, they can go into your employment, they can go to your bank, right? The bank is not allowed to tell you, and they are not allowed to acknowledge that it was ever done. Same thing with your employer. But we'll let that one drift out. Somebody's going to pick that up. As far as the scandals, I hate being conspiratorial, but when they start coming out one day after another, all right, you have more than a leak problem there. You know, and I strongly suspect political games behind a lot of this. They give a decent case for needing national security. I'll buy that. Where, you know, I run into some problems. You're not listening to my phone calls. You're collecting the phone numbers. Okay, good for you. All right, you're going to make your own phone book. And what they do, I don't know if you know this, you can go in to programs online, telephone numbers, and put them in. They do a reverse lookup. So now you've got the name, address, and city, state, and town where the person is. I don't know if you were aware of that.
Yes, I was.
Okay. I did investigation work in my early years. My concern believe it or not, is not so much on a national security level. It's more on, okay, you see how this information got leaked? We know about it because they gave it to the press. Who's to tell me these people aren't doing this and they're not giving it to the press? Not to say they're spies for another country, okay? But if I could take care of you, and I know you got a good job, so I got to have deep pockets. If I could take care of you, can you do this at this time for me? Now, I'm being conspiratorial, but hey, this stuff's coming down one day, one after another, after another. They're all leaks.
Right? Look, I mean, everything that you're saying is plausible, and it's the reason why you need accountability in all these things. How that is done, Joe, is above my pay grade, but that's not what I'm paid to do.
the people that are upset now that should have been upset when I got upset, I'm pissed. Okay, it's not President Obama. George Bush is gone. Improvements were made. You know, I get what you want. I don't like it. Now, simply go after the law. Same thing with the IRS. If they get this thing blown up in court, right, the law, that 501c4, when the law says you can't give any money to a political campaign, it's forbidden. Some bureaucrat changed the wording on it, believe it or not, like in 1959. And that allowed it. So let's get it in the court. I'd love to hear Justice Scalia's ruling on it.
There was a big exchange within a congressman, and 908, I see you with your hands up. You're next. Joe, there was a big thing in Congress this week where a congressman really interrogated the new head of the or interim head of the IRS, where he said the law that the Congress wrote said that they could not engage in any political actions at all. And they changed the word to mostly or primarily or some one of those words, which means the regulation was in direct conflict with the actual law. I don't even see a problem really with simply, I mean, based on that alone, based on any IRS agent who looked at Tea Party or Great Progressive, whatever, and says, I'm sorry, we are going to scrutinize to make sure you don't do any politics. They would be following the law, that they're not following the regulation, which takes precedence, the law or the regulation. In my book, it's the law.
Well, what I did when this started coming down, at least with the IRS and AP, is put myself in the person's shoes. I empathize. I worked for the government, so I know what bureaucracies are like. And I looked at that IRS thing, and I said, okay, so I'm sitting there. Okay, and I know the kind of direction you get from above on a lot of it. But ultimately, I'm the grunt, I'm the guy on the ground here, and I've got to get it done. And now you cut the staff down to where it's me and five people, there's me and two people. So what am I going to do? I mean, top of my head, I'm going to put things in alphabetical order. I'm getting diluted with primarily one type of 401(4c). So, I mean, if there's a percentage that has to be taken out of that, naturally there's going to be a larger one, all right? Now, when you
I agree.
When you get a leak like this, when an investigation reveals all this, okay, the president, it's like, he's so remote to this, I can't even bring him into it. But you're putting the people doing the work, all right, on the line, and it's
exactly.
Like they were set up. You didn't give them clear direction. The regulations are not clear. They're all clouded. So you want to fix this. You want to fix the Patriot Act. Fix the law. And nobody talks about that. It's a big blame game down there. That's why I think it's political. I'm sorry, you know, and if you know, anybody in NSA is listening, come get me, because that's how it is. You know, something's going on down there. Something is really going on.
You are, but, you, You are so correct in your assessment, and I don't think you have a problem with the NSA. I mean, it's not, believe it or not, even those of us that do a lot of complaining, that's not the ones that that anybody would really want. They want much bigger fish, if you know what I will. And that is the reason why in our types of movements, you know, you don't want any big heads. What you want is you want a whole lot of different spheres, because you can't knock all the spheres out. You can only knock a few out. But anyhow, that is another subject that I'm alluding to that I don't want to discuss right now. Anyhow, stay with me, Joe, and
sure.
Welcome back. It's great to have
Thanks.
That strong voice of reason back on the show. Haven't heard from you in a while, and great having you back. Now, with 908-908, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, buddy. John from Jersey again.
John from Jersey. Talk to me.
How you been? You know, most of this, all these issues that are going on, in my opinion, are at the congressional fault, you know, not in the presidential realm. But I want to go to NSA and all this, the issues regards to NSA first. Regards to NSA, you know, everybody's worried about our Fourth Amendment rights and this and that. Fine. Okay, that's what the original thing of the Constitution was, and basically they've thrown it out, you know, and they've reevaluated, and basically, you know, it's been redesigned in many ways, you know, but it's a necessity, because today we have nuclear weapons, okay? Now, the fact that if somebody, you know, if they all, so we're going to have all the liberal groups now, and I'm a liberal, but we're going to have all the liberal groups go off on this thing and go off on the president about our Fourth Amendment rights and rights of privacy, okay? And this has been going on for since 40 years that they've been really investigating and tapping in on us, at least, okay, since easily the Nixon era.
John, hold on a second.
Hold on one moment. But
let me tell you what I'm trying. No, this is important. What I want to say, because I want to talk about you being correct, first of all, in that assessment. But most importantly, remember when you're stating this, that even this story with regards to the NSA, there was not a new story here. This occurred in 2006. It's important, and I put it in the article there. It is important that people realize.
I didn't read your article. That's what I'm.
Okay, in 2000. And it's important that you talk in that context, however. This is not a new thing. The NSA
has
been...
Oh, of course it's not a new thing.
Right.
I've known about it for years, too, like everybody else. Should have known about it. AO in Maine, I can't believe that she sits on the Intelligence Committee and doesn't know much about what's going on. She should be removed from her job. A bunch of them should be removed from their job. But let's put it this way. No, she must have. But she talked about as if she didn't, which is foolish, and then she should be off the committee. But the thing is, if something were to happen disastrous in this country, like another 9/11, then what would we be saying to the President of the United States and the Congress about this? That's my whole point. Then the fools of this country who don't want the NSA to do what they properly have to do. And otherwise, what is the purpose of an NSA for, is my thing. What is the purpose of having the National Security Agency unless they're recording, unless they're, you know, doing what they're supposed to do the Pfizer way, where they record everything as much as possible, and then if they need via the Pfizer to where they have to get to review things via a judge, a FISA judge, and then that's the way it should be. And everybody's getting alarmed. They're creating another, okay, the IRS thing and this and that and everything. They're trying to throw everything on the plate to the president right now. This has been going on for years.
Let me add something to what you're saying, because this is important. It is funny. First of all, I like my privacy. I'm sure you like your privacy as well, John. I'm sure Joel loves his privacy as well. However, the one thing that we have to take into account is that we live in the real world. Unfortunately, and this is a hit that I must put on my liberal brethren, because sometimes they allow themselves to be used by the plutocracy, and I mentioned that in the article as well. And the way they allow themselves to be used is as follows. Yes, it is true that a lot of my privacy was probably taken advantage of, but how do we get around that? There are a lot of ways to get around that in that fulfills the framework that we want. In other words, if all this data is collected on the premise that is based on technology that we have today, that is how we can solve, or that could is what makes us safer. If we are convinced of that, that can make us safer, then we put in laws of what cannot be done legally to an entity or a person with that particular collected data. In other words, to have a balance, you say, well, if this data was collected by NSA for XYZ reasons, it can never be used in a suit against John from Jersey.
Well, Obama put it very well. So, like, politically, let's say he leaves office, okay, and or Hillary. So now the Republicans who are in office want to know about the next Democratic candidate, just like Nixon did. So, yes, Obama put it very well. He put it like, I have to be worried about it, too. I have to be worried about it when I leave office that I'll be tapped directly, not indirectly. Like, I mean, yes, if he's indirectly tapped in the sense of all his conversations and everything else and his phone numbers and who he speaks to is tapped, is fine, okay, because that's part of this FISA thing. But
right.
It's the review. It's who's reviewing it and why and what purpose. Therefore, we have to create non-political something that's going to be to the matter of this thing. And I'll tell you who puts it well, Bill Maher. Bill Maher says if we
exactly.
can go and
yesterday
review,
he talked no, about it. Yes.
Yeah. He says if we can go and review the Fourth Amendment, then guess what? We can go review the Second Amendment here now.
Oh, you got that, didn't you?
You betcha.
Hey, John, I want to tell you something because I have a task that I'd like to ask all us listeners to do, okay? Right now, the media is driving a narrative, and I don't even think this narrative is real for those that I love to call our plutocracy. I think right now what folks want is a lot of confusion. I'm going to go into a little thing here. Here's what I honestly believe. I believe that Obama's first term was a term to placate the plutocracy as best as possible and still get a framework in a position that good could occur, middle-class-centric good could occur. That's my honest belief. I am not going to tell anybody that I can prove any of this, but that's what I believe. Secondly, with moves that have been made forward after the election, I'll give some examples. OFA, the new OFA that no longer stands for Obama for America, but it's more of a, some of it is more grassroots in nature, and I have some inside working with that as well. It's interesting that a lot of the plutocracy, if you will, is being left out of that, and it sort of has a mind of its own. In Texas, there is a group called Battleground Texas that is working outside the realm of the Democratic Party or any other party simply for a task. And that task is to get Texas representative of who the voters are within the state. That occurs, the type of policies that are going to start coming out of Texas are going to be fairly progressive policies.
Well, they're
now,
still worried about it going purple now.
Or exactly. Well, I don't even think purple. I think solid blue. But But when I say blue, I'm not even necessarily talking Democratic Party blue, because I do have some problems with my party per se, in that it is not the middle class centric party that it needs to be. Some of it is by choice. Some of it is by necessity. We can discuss that. It's in another term, but I mean, What I really think is occurring now is to ensure that this man's real foothold doesn't come about. And when I say this man, I'm not talking about Obama the man. I'm talking about Obama the concept. The concept of what the people that voted for him expected him to be. There are a lot of people out there that are Obama bots. I don't think anybody that listens to my show is an Obama bot. We are a middle-class-centric bot, or we are middle-class-centric bots. And whoever, whatever out there is going to do that job that is going to be necessary to empower the middle class, that's what we are going to support. That is what we are going to do. Mm-hmm. Capiche? Do you guys agree with me so far? Speak up.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So what I'm envisioning here is a lot of chaos that has no substance. It is true that we have all these secret things going on that the NSA is doing, but is it new? No, it isn't. Do we want it changed? I don't know. And I'll take, you know, I mean, Bill Maher is a comedian, okay? But in this, on that respect, I think Bill Maher has it right. I don't know. But right now, if it's somehow keeping folks from being blown up, I can deal with it. You know,
absolutely.
I am not going to sit down in some elitist high ivory tower and say, oh, but you're going against the Constitution. It's amazing to me that a lot of my liberal brethren who talks about elitism and plutocracy and all these things would stay in these buildings themselves and look at this document, this constitutional document. And by the way, remember, when this document was written anyway, only 10% of American citizens were even considered real citizens, could even vote, would somehow have a problem with what we do currently. Joe.
But the biggest farce is we are, as the founding fathers wanted us to reevaluate things. So this solidification that it came from God almost of the Constitution, the Fourth Amendment is being judged right now, and the Second Amendment should be judged right now too.
Absolutely. Joe, you got something to say?
I agree. Yeah, no, I totally agree. When you're looking at security and you want to protect the people, and as President Obama said, took an oath to do that, and the Constitution, you operate within the law. The law is where the problem is, not what he's doing. And if we have, I don't know if they'd be staffers, bureaucrats, or individual elected representatives, okay, that can't pass something, look at it, recognize its flaws, or try to use some foresight, God forbid they ever tried that, right, and see this the way common citizens might if they paid attention, right, you'd have a better law. Now, I'm on President Obama's side with regard to this. We can't have 100% of everything without doing something. Now, if you're going to fix this, if you're going to make it palatable, if you're going to restore the trust in government that, in my opinion, somebody out there is trying to destroy, okay, you work within it. Now, you do have to take into account, you know, the law. But if you, I don't know how to word it, if you're going to protect someone, that someone you're protecting has to be cooperative. And
exactly.
We have to, I'm sorry it has to be that way. But the way when you go through these laws, I mean, my big thing is I put it on the chat room. Where's recourse to the innocent? If this thing went out of whack in secrecy and somebody's name, reputation, job, I don't know, it damaged them. They're out in the cold. They got nowhere to turn. There has to be some check balances and follow-up that if mistakes are made, something there is going to at least rectify it. And this is what bothers me about all of this. You know, we're being protected, but if they screw up, make a mistake, we're in the cold. You know, that's
Amen.
Not my fault. Therefore, I will not vote. Now, there's another caveat to a good deal of the security laws that came in, call it like it is, during Republican administrations. I put this in the chat room, too. When you read this thing, the Patriot Act, what you're going to do, that and NDAA. Let's say they're going through all this, the mining information. They pick up stuff, but it's not related to national security. And I'm going to be serious. Maybe it's a drug ring. Maybe people are running guns. Maybe it's a prostitution ring. I mean, I'm talking crime. They refer it to local authorities. Now, what does it bother me? This is a national agency. I don't need a national police force. If you know this stuff is active, give the resources to the areas and the wherewithal that they can find it themselves. I just do not like this being done to 330 million people. It's something, if local crime is local crime, I just got bad feelings about we'll gather the evidence and they'll never know what hit them.
Joe, that is why I said we want, if this aggregation of data is necessary, and, you know, one of the things I don't want to ever assume is that I know it all or that any of us know it all. So we have to have a certain amount of faith, not blind faith, but explained faith in our system. And this doesn't only apply to Obama, Bush, or anybody else, but we have to have a certain amount of faith in the system as long as we have checks and balances. Now, what you said is extremely important, very, very important. Let's say in the aggregation of data, somehow it is found that somebody is a prostitute in Timbuktu, Texas. Should that data be transferred to the local entity? Absolutely not. So what we were saying before is that we can actually put checks and balances in the usage of this data so that it cannot be overtly used to, you know, to attack, let's say, the rest of the population. Now, some people are going to say, well, you're naive. If that data is there, even if they don't do it overtly, they can do it covertly. Well, you know what? They can also monitor your phone covertly. So, I mean, what we're saying is we know that people are going to go around legal structures, but we still want to have legal structures. And once we have these legal structures in play, yeah, some of it's going to be broken, but do you prefer having some of these legal structures broken or simply less defense? I am sorry. I think I'll err on the side of let's try to keep our cities a bit more safe for that reason. So, I mean, there are a lot of different ways to look at that. Now, migraine chooses less defense. Migraine would be nice if you're – yes, go ahead, John.
One thing that people keep forgetting about, besides the Constitution, is Interpol. You know, we're not just in a Constitution world anymore. I'm just saying, you know, that this is part of the whole thing. Look what happened with Boston. We said that the whole problem with what occurred in Boston, or you know, was because we didn't have intelligence from the Russians because they're not basically part of Interpol because of the whole thing from the Cold War. The whole thing from the Cold War has deterred some countries like China and Russia especially from basically being part of Interpol, you know, or in the manner that they should be.
I didn't know that Russia was not in Interpol.
Well, no, but what I'm saying to you is that the desire to not release certain informations is because of the Cold War. And
I got you.
And, you know, and therefore, that's the discussions between their KGB and our FBI have been broken down. And it's still that way because look what's going on with Obama now with the Chinese about intelligence. We're also worried about how much intelligence the other country has. You know?
Right. I want to ask our listeners to do something. And by the way, folks, the telephone number, there are several of you online, but you haven't pressed 1 to speak. If you want to speak, please remember to push the number 1. Anyway, the telephone number, folks, is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. But I tell you what, remember one of the things of this show that I constantly say. The intent of our show here, and it's not my show, it is our show. The intent of our show is to be proactive. In other words, we don't just come here, talk about problems, but we also do something about problems. So as you know, this week is the week that all these supposed scandals are multiplying or occurring and whatever. On this specific issue, I'm going to ask you, if you believe a certain way about that these things are not scandals or whatever, whatever you believe, I think one of the things that I want to get out of here is that we call our respective congresspersons and tell them, get off of this crap and let's start doing things to find folks jobs. Let's start fixing these darn bridges. Let's start making our airports not the first good airport in America, the 35th airport. Think about that. Or 30th, I think. I wrote a blog a few weeks ago. Do you realize that as far as people are concerned, our airports don't even hit the top 25? That's shameful. Therefore,
yeah, look at our school systems.
Oh, my God. Don't get me there, Joe, because
you can get me on the roll bringing all this up.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, so I'm going to ask you folks that are listening to this, engage, call the politicians and tell them, get off their rumps, get off of all this other crap, and start serving the people. It is important that we do that. So that's what I want to get out. Anybody listening to this, call the politicians, because it's not enough for us to just stay here, discuss, argue, and gripe about what's going on. We got to go out there and do something about what's going on. That is how change occurs. Folks, 646-929-2495. A lot of you are on, but only Joe and John's talking. So call up, hit the number 1. Don't be scared to talk. We don't bite out here. Anything else, John, before I go to my other blog?
Well, I guess not right now. I mean, the only thing that regards, you know, IRS, I guess I'm good for now, yeah. But
okay, the first blog I read, I think it had to do with the indentured servitude, sort of what Cliff Olney from, you know, he's one of my iReport's partners in crime. The other blog that I wanted to read is actually titled Cover Up. It's called Cover Up, Uncovered News is the Real Scandal. Uncovered News is the Real Scandal. Here it goes. It is called Bait and Switch. It is called Smoke and Mirrors. There are several cable news and on-air news broadcast networks, MSNBC, CNN, HLN, Fox News, ABC News, NBC News, CBS News, NPR, Pacifica, etc. Yet, the coverage of news remains shallow. With that many outlets and that much airtime to fill, one would expect that impactful news from around the country and around the world would be covered. Sadly, if one listens to any one of the above-mentioned networks, the same minute news sphere is covered. America is perceived as the leader of the world. With that comes responsibilities. An informed citizenry is required to elect politicians that will execute their office for the well-being of the country and the world. And uninformed citizenry is easily manipulated for the benefits of the manipulators. Because a plurality of Americans still get their news from broadcast media, it is the tool of choice of the manipulators, the American plutocracy. If there was appropriate coverage of the ExxonMobil tar sands pipeline spill, would Americans not give more scrutiny to the Keystone XL pipeline? If Americans were informed ad nauseum as they are with the current crop of manufactured scandals hitting the airwaves that Canadian tar sands are simply passing through for export, provide very few jobs for the risk, and is the oil spill, and as in the oil spill in Arkansas, near impossible to clean up, would they allow this pipeline to be built? If Americans had real coverage of how sequester is financially affecting millions of their fellow citizens, the hardships they are going through, the permanent damage to the education of their children, the damage to small business persons, and much more, would they not revolt and force our government to act? They certainly would. If Americans were informed of the environmental, economic, and political damage many corporations do to communities in foreign countries under America's namesake, would Americans be as willing to intervene in these countries to protect corporate interests? If that were the case, there would not have been an Iraq war or an Afghanistan war. If Americans were informed of the real fraud against the middle class that is the current tax paradigm, they would revolt. If Americans were informed of the real reasons behind income and wealth disparity in the U.S. as opposed to allowing manipulators to free access to misinform, Americans would elect more representatives that would effect middle class centric policies. Things are never as they seem. The mainstream media keeps the populace distracted generally with frivolities as decisions that are impactful and many times damaging in the middle class remain uncovered and under the radar. The real scandal in America is that there is a big cover-up. There is a cover-up of real news. The free press is really the owned and manipulated press. There is hope and resolve, however. As long as the fight to keep the internet open and accessible remains, those wanting to provide real information and news will provide it. It is incumbent on them, however, to ensure it reaches the necessary consumer. Now, folks, notice what I say in that blog. I want to read that last paragraph again. There is hope and resolve, however, as long as the fight to keep the internet open and accessible remains, those wanting to provide real information, that's you, listeners, that's you. Those wanting, if you are out there, and just like Joe Pomponio or John, you have legitimate, you have valid information. Remember what I said at the beginning of this program, folks. Your sphere of influence is a lot larger than you even or possibly believe. The mere fact that you take the stand to get there and get informed, people look at you as that source of information. People build up the respect for you based on the information that you provide. You have your sphere of influence. You can be impactful. Those wanting to provide real information and news will provide it. It is incumbent on them, however, on you, however, to ensure it reaches the consumer. And how does it get to the consumer? Hey, guys, look at what yours truly is doing, Blog Talk Radio. I'm putting my stuff out there. Joe, I imagine, Joe, you're going to be putting your stuff out there at some time, right, Joe?
Oh, yeah. I got the mail on the business cards. That's a fabulous idea.
Excellent, my friend. Good.
Yeah. There was also a rally here in Albany. Got some good coverage. for Fair Elections New York. And with that, because we try to get a handle on campaign financing, I'm still stuck on public financing. I'm just the only solution to this problem in my lifetime. I'm not saying an amendment to the Constitution is wrong. But if we can't get public financing, we're going to go down the tubes. We have to control the process by which these people are elected. And we can't leave it to where deep pockets can do whatever they want and the rest of us have to live with it. It's not right.
You know, you just said something that I think is important. As you know, I also work with Move to Amend, and our goal is to amend the Constitution to codify that money is not speech and that corporations are – well, it's not – Caitlin on the show on Thursday actually had a better explanation than just saying corporations are not people. There's a better way that we've said it, and right now I can't come up with the words that she used, but it was I think I just put the show up on my blog. It's called Move to Amend Reports with Laura and Egberto. We do a show on Thursdays. And Caitlin was our unknown featured guest. She's the director of Move to Amend. And she gave an answer to why we do what we do with Move to Amend. And she actually had a pretty darn good explanation as the difference between personhood, made-up entities. They call them artificial entities, I believe, and so forth. And I'd have to go re-listen to how she put it. But I want to start using that language. But whatever the case may be, you're correct. And I think a lot of us, even in that Move to Amend movement, Joe, we have to look at what you're saying. You made a thing that says, in my lifetime, I want to see change. And in my lifetime, I may not see that constitutional change. So are we going to just get there, or are we going to also accept gradations? I think when I sit down and rack my brain, I actually think sometimes you have to work with gradations of how things get accomplished. And it goes from even that blog that I just read where I stated that we have to fight to keep the Internet open, right? Assuming totalitarianism, all somebody has to do is to shut down the Internet and our voices are gone. They can shut the Internet down much faster than we can get an amendment to a constitution. So in following what you're saying, Joe, I think it's important to note that we have to work on gradations. We have to work on little changes as well, just to ensure that rules and avenues stay open so that we can work towards the bigger change. You know, there's a whole lot of people who just think, let's go for the big thing. You know, what you're doing is simply wrong. Trying to work within some structure is simply wrong. And
let me ask you something.
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Why do you think that they'll ever shut down the Internet, and maybe only on selected people? I mean, there's too much revenue to desire to shut it down. And
John. I need to respond to that because our once our audience hear that, they're going to. So what do you mean? I probably have not explained shut down the Internet correctly. I'm not talking about all the people that using the Internet as consumers. I'm talking about all the people using it like we're using it right now. Let me give an example. They're not going to just shut it down. That's not what they're going to do. What they're going to do is, as an example, I pay X amount of dollars to be able to have an internet show, okay? Now, think about inflating those dollars for those who provide information. I also have a blog.
They may want to tax it. They may
exactly.
want to tax it in the future.
Exactly. I have a blog. My blog gets, you know, tens of thousands of hits every month, over 100,000 hits every month. Suppose they start billing on a per traffic basis, where that becomes unaffordable, whereas only the plutocracy can afford to use the Internet. Then everybody can read the Internet. Everybody can be receiving information, but we control those who can provide the information on the Internet. That's what I mean by shutdown of the Internet. Not that people won't be able to use it, but that our voices are minimized.
Because they never want to shut it down. They want to keep track of people and conversations. And figure out what's going on, you know,
exactly.
Terrorist activity and everything, so they can figure things out.
It's
exactly.
The same thing with public education, okay? What they want in privatizing it is now they can control what the children learn, okay? The reason you have these buyouts, okay? The reason they ship the jobs overseas, the shrink down, break up the organizations that are there. That makes it easier for them to move in, okay? Spread rhetoric among the people so they're arguing with each other, like Americans are now, not us perhaps, but that's what's happening on the news media. They make money doing it. The 1% media is loving this. They don't want this thing to stop ever. And it's our government that by doing this, they're going to create a lot of distrust in.
Absolutely.
Look, I'm an MSNBC, I'm Bloomberg, CNN, I got no use for Fox, okay? Free Speech TV, I observe these things, okay? And what you're getting, right, are essentially, they want to make money. And they hype this stuff, and they don't factually check anything. Joe Scarborough, 2 days ago, he's on there blasting about the Patriot Act thing. And I was watching it. I emailed it to him. I went online, downloaded it, and emailed it to him. He didn't know what he was talking about. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. But it stokes the fires. It revs people up. It's red meat for somebody. And they make money off it. I appreciate the request, but let's try to stay factual. You can relax about it. Just stay factual. Yeah?
Absolutely.
In my case, it's like now, I'm on alert. It's like,
right.
These are people I didn't expect this from. You want to blow somebody off, go right ahead, but go to the facts and try to find out how responsible the people are. And like you said, there are solutions to it. Fix the law.
Amen.
It's not hard.
Amen. So look here, dear listeners, I'm tasking you. I think it is time for us to activate. And when I say I'm tasking you, I don't mean just you. I mean your entire sphere of influence. Let's use geometric progression here. Let's each of you take 10 folks and tell them to call your rep. Tell them to get busy, and each of those, tell them to tell the other ones to do 10. Let's get something going here, and then drop me a line about it. Egberto@coffeepartyusa.com or Egberto@egbertowillies.com. Just drop me a line. Tell me who you call, what kind of response you get. Tell them to get their butts to work. 404, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Robert Rodrigo, gentlemen, good afternoon. Sorry, I'm late.
Hey, Roberto.
Rodrigo. How are you doing?
I'm good. We're having fun with this discussion on this 10-sided story, and, of course, I'm being conservative. a couple of comments, and I apologize. I haven't been here for the first hour, so you guys may have covered it. But, I was in my community when the Patriot Act was enacted. Well, actually, let me back up a minute. When I was in the military under Ronald Reagan, I actually was telling people that with what I'm seeing in our society and from our government, and now, of course, it's 1980 to 1986, I think there's going to be a revolution. I obviously didn't know what I was talking about because we just kind of drank the Kool-Aid. But when the Patriot Act came out, in my community, I was the Russ Feingold. And if you don't know what I mean by that, The vote in the Senate on the Patriot Act was 98-1. And I went back and confirmed that when all this stuff was going on. So, of course, I wanted to see who was still in government. And then, of course, they just reauthorized three provisions of the Patriot Act in 2011. So, of course, I wanted to see what the vote was there, too. And the vote was 86-12 with two abstains. 9 Democrats, 2 Republicans, and Bernie Sanders. Now, out of the people who didn't vote for it, I'm sorry? I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Robert.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, can I? Wait a minute.
Yeah, go ahead, Robert. I think he was talking to somebody.
Get off my blitz here. Hey, sorry about that. Okay, so, we're looking at one of those situations that we've talked about before, all of us, where you have the so-called bipartisan agreement. There's no question. I mean, the Foreign Surveillance Act, the FISA, and all that stuff. I mean, there's no question this was coming down the pipe. Then, of course, you have if any of you were watching Marr last night, you had him mention, and I actually went and posted it all over the place this morning, that 2006 article by USA Today that said that they were doing exactly what we just heard about. They were
exactly
doing.
I posted that in the blog to this show this morning as well.
Yes, and then you have. And then, of course, you have, think about this for a second. You have the whistleblower law. Now, we know that the whistleblower law protects somebody who reveals people or government agencies doing illegal things. Well, what the government is doing technically is not illegal. So they're going to hammer whoever leaked all this stuff, and they're gone. And then we're going to hear about how we're not protecting whistleblowers, but there's no whistleblowing here because there's no crime. Then you have all the outrage.
That's
like
a good
that
one, Robert.
Then you have the outrage against the black man in office, which is the same outrage we should have had in 2006, and the same outrage when they were writing these things. But of course, the Kool-Aid is a different flavor now, and of course, it's going to get people elected. So, regardless of the fact that, for example, as the Republican strategist said even last night, reminded us all that Karl Rove is backing President Obama, you know, don't everybody fall out of their chair, there's still going to be problems with the elections for whatever side. So to me, this is another example of why we need to get the two-party stranglehold away from the government. One of my problems has always been, for example, like there are people who I have a lot of agreement with, especially in the libertarian area, on certain issues, who support Rand Paul. I refuse to support Rand Paul for a couple of reasons, but the main reason is the same reason why I wouldn't support his father is because he refuses to remove himself from the GOP. Before I ever knew anything about before the Tea Party ever turned into a maniac party, I was furious with them because they joined the GOP. I would be furious about anybody else who joined the Democratic Party because that's not the point. If you're going to be principled, then be principled. And, of course, everybody just follows the money, it seems like. But this story is so convoluted and has so many different directions to look at it. If people would just sit back and turn off their damn television for a minute and read the stuff, read the law.
Thank you.
Talk about, read the decisions
Thank
that
you.
Have been supporting it. You know,
right.
Maybe they get a clue.
You know, the reality is the reason why you still see the president act the way he acts is in as much as it goes against certain principles or whatever, he's on solid legal ground solid legal ground. And if you want change, yeah, exactly. Let me bring 620 in, and then we'll continue the discussion. 620, you're hot.
Okay, this is Jack Golding.
Hey, Jack.
Jack, you know, I can never remember your number. Jack Golden, talk to me.
Yeah, well, I'm getting more and more disgusted with what Congress is doing. I think I don't know if this is relevant to what we're discussing, but
you've earned relevance. You've earned relevance,
right.
Jack. You can say anything you
That's
want.
Right.
Okay. Sir Harry Reid needs to get some cojones. And cojones, chutzpah, whatever you want to call it, and do the nuclear option, particularly on anything.
Including getting the judges
Supreme
through.
Court justice, and you have judges, and I can't see staying at 8 instead of 11 for the District Columbia courts, and I think we need And I'm going to say this. They're hiding behind definitions.
Thank you. That's a. Let me tell you, you're so right, Jack. You are so right, Jack.
Definition is never a fact. It's only a matter of opinion, what they think about.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And, well, thank you. Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I got some more. Very simple, too. The whole thing is, again, with the tax code. I used to work for H&R Block, and they probably will get them out of business. With my attitude, I think we should do away with all deductions,
I know all credits and deductions.
Status.
Yes, yeah. Sir.
And just leave one exemption for people making $10,000 a year or less for everybody who files. And also for seniors, another additional $10,000 deduction for $20,000. And then another solution for Social Security, do away with the cap completely, and also put all city and state workers under Social Security.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Now, I have another call that wants to come in as well, my dear friend. Hang with us. I'll come back to you as well. Okay, my friend?
Yeah.
All right, 707, you're hot. 707, you're hot. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Linda from Northern California.
Linda from NC, talk to me.
Okay, I have to agree with what pretty much everybody's saying. Your second piece that you were talking about the media coverage and everything.
Yes, ma'am.
I was disgusted with for coverage of the pipeline. You know, they
right.
forced the helicopters to stop filming. I'm not sure exactly which agency did that. It sounded like it was federal. It stopped the helicopters from filming so we could actually see the damage.
Now, can you believe that?
Occurred.
No, let me ask you something.
I know, I was so mad. But actually makes that call?
Exactly. Think about this, Linda. We have O.J. Simpson running away from the cops, and we have helicopters covering that 24/7. We have shootings in L.A. We have cameras and helicopters covering that 24/7. We have any kinds of things happening to regular, average American folks, and the helicopters are there in that airspace, sometimes airspaces that are pretty tight, covering that. The question is, why aren't we seeing the coverage of that damage that was done by the oil spill in Arkansas? Please tell me.
My question to you is, who makes that call? Is it federal?
Anybody who knows who controls airspace, even
the state? It has to be the FAA, at least the local version of it has to be. It's got to come from, and I would also think that depending, and I don't know exactly where the spill happened in relevant to, like, for example, if it happened by the lake by my house, the Army Corps of Engineers runs the lakes in the state of Georgia. I don't know exactly what bodies of water there may be around, but the FAA definitely was the one that at least relays that airspace has been restricted to the pilots. So wherever they're getting their order from, it's got to come from somebody in their chain of command, either as a response to a request by somebody locally or by a decision made by somebody above them in the chain of command, definitely. So more than likely, it's a federal or federally originated restriction.
And that is sad.
I would agree, yeah. Yeah, hey, Berto, I would agree with that. Linda, I did see some coverage of it. It was on the ground. And until you just mentioned it, it was off in one day, and that was it.
Yes.
Yeah. And they showed it, and they said that they had suspected the pipelines were made for oil, and they were sending that sand tar through. They think the reasons the pipes broke is the minerals in sand tar. It's not oil. It's like there's grit in it. Wore the pipes out because the pipes were not put in there for this. And that was
certainly feasible.
On it. It was going to what Linda's saying, all right? Somebody obviously wanted that information not to be followed up on. And the news media dropped. They're not doing their job.
Well, I tell you what.
Right.
I have a blog. In that blog that I read, Linda, it's called... It's also inside of the post that I made for this show, both the emails that I send out for the blast and on my blog. It's called Cover Up. Uncovered News is the Real Scandal. In that particular blog, I have a video from somebody who's on the ground talking about the spill at a lake. He's at one of those lakes in Arkansas. As you know, there's no external coverage, so these are people with their own video cameras doing stuff. My gut feeling tells me that a lot of those people, and this now is completely non-factual, folks, so I always qualify that when I'm not speaking facts, but my bet is that the reason a whole lot more isn't on YouTube and otherwise is I can bet you a lot of those people signed non-disclosures if they would not put any videos up and probably got paid to do so and not being able to talk about it. I know nothing about that, but what I mean is there is such a cover-up there. There's so much. There's such a wide coverage at this oil covered with so little out there. I mean, yes, you can find spills on YouTube and so forth, but the volume that I would have expected from people's phones and so forth, it's just not there. I've looked.
Well, the same thing happened. The same thing happened when it happened in Gulfport. You know, I was involved with that company. That was one of the companies that was involved in the cleanup, T.L. Wallace, out of Mississippi, and. The cover-up as well, whatever we want to call it, the lack of coverage, let me put it that way, the lack of coverage of that oil spill and the lack of access to key areas was a mess. You know, they talked about it at length, and they weren't getting away with it as much because of the areas that were involved. I mean, you just really, it's kind of hard to do so many restrictions when you're dealing with the fishing industry, you're dealing with the military, you're dealing with the beach communities. It's so much easier if they are doing it to restrict access to an area like Arkansas.
Right, right, right. Okay, well, you know what? I want to bring Janine in. Janine is on our board of directors. She's also the director of Coffee Party. She kind of runs operational director, and I haven't heard from her in a while, so I'd like to hear her point of view. So, my dear Janine, come on in.
Yeah, buenos dias, I better come.
Como estás?
Again. So, this has been a fascinating show, I think, because we're kind of doing the dance that always gets we, the thinkers, engaged, but I'm not always sure we take it far enough to actually get to the point of what do we do. You know what I'm saying? Because this is a rich, it's a rich body of knowledge. What I had to do when I committed myself or declared myself an activist was to sort of put myself in a position where is something happening and vetting that truth. And that's what we're doing here today. We're vetting some truths or some facts. I like facts because hopefully facts and truth, you know, they're going to line up. But truth is a little more subjective, right? So we're vetting facts. Like, for example, in Arkansas, there was a cover-up. And thank goodness for the internet, because it was the internet that busted it out, right? And it was social media, socially responsible media that took the bait. Because, you know, truly nobody covered this until it was so much over the internet that it wasn't happening, other than perhaps some very local coverage. So the fact we know here is that regardless of how they did it, there was a cover-up. And I try not to go too far down the how did they do it, only because I could spend my life doing that. When I'm convinced when I'm convinced the cover-up happened, I went to work. And I, you know, we probably, Coffee Party alone probably spread this news to a half a million people. And, you know what I mean? And it's up to all of us to use the tools at hand, whether it's, I mean, Debbie Lynn and I did an entire show on this.
Right,
and so,
right.
So I think it's an excellent example of the mischief that occurs. We know it occurs. We need to identify it. We need to act. And we need to form actions, large or small. The large action was to spread the word and make it undeniable, right? And so it's kind of, I'm a retired business person, and I know that a business that just even states its goals is better than a business that doesn't. And that a business with a business plan will virtually always do better than a business that doesn't have a business plan. And the more in depth to understanding the outcome you desire, you go in your meditations and in your strategizing, right? The more effective people become. And so that's I'm tying this all around back to this whole notion that we have this campaign called Free the Elected, right? And our your participation with Move to Amend is a part of Coffee Party outreach to other groups that feel the same way. And so my business plan, if you want to call it that, is to look at everything and say, in what way would freeing the elected from the tyranny of money in politics impact this fact? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And, you know, Janine, I think that is an important thing, how we put all of that together. And I like that. That is what we do. We're using all. And by the way, Robert, I'm going to put you back on in a little bit. I was just getting some background noise. That is one of what I like with the way we're operating with our shows, and that is to do exactly that, try to get folks engaged into doing something. Now, everybody know that we're working on the Free Elected program, which is on 535, and we're still in a lot of the formative and fundraising phases of these programs, but doesn't stop us from actually doing the things that we need to get done. One of the reasons, I don't know if you were on, Janine, when I told our listeners that it's not just about coming here and talking and hearing or, you know, just being pissed at what's going on, but it's
okay.
About when you leave this show, how are we empowered to go do something about it? And you can be empowered
exactly
5 seconds afterwards. That fight, you know, Joe Pomponio gave me a task. And when I looked and I tell you folks that this is a bidirectional learning experience, it's something. I'm a political activist, but you know what I didn't have? I didn't have all of my relevant politicians' telephone numbers on my cell phone ready to dial. Joe Pomponio, about, I don't know, probably 2 months ago, he brought that up. I have my XYZ on my cell phone speed dial. I'm like, wow. You know, something as simple as that. And here's this activist, didn't even have it done that way. I did it. We are here to get ideas of how we are going to actually affect something. So you want to do something, it's going to be minimal, but it'll be something that you, that the task that you do as soon as you listen to it, whether you're listening to this live or on podcast. When we're done, go give your congressman a call. But before you give your congressman a call, let's do what Joe Pomponio tasked you to do. Put your relevant politicians, your congressman, your senator, and when I say congressman and senator, I mean both local and federal, on your speed dial so that you can reach them. And immediately after this call, after this show, give them a call. Tell them something that is bothering you, but give them a call. And also, I want to ask you to say one special thing. You're a member of Coffee Party, and you intend to make a difference. Please do that.
Bravo. Bravo.
Please do that.
There you go.
Okay, and now let me get Robert back in. He wanted to say something. And please stay with me, Janine.
No worries.
Go ahead, Robert.
I have a premise for everybody. I don't know the specifics of how the people who are on this call feel about the drone aspect. I posted a drone conference video recording for you, Egberto, this morning, and for you, Janine, this morning.
I saw that. I think I liked it.
It's a conference that I went to personally and participated in personally the other night. And one of the reasons why these issues are important to me is because I always see what I call that night the Pandora's box. Now, we're sitting here looking at a situation this week that is being polarized that actually happened years ago with the way that Big Brother is watching us and the way that the Surveillance Act's work and the Patriot Act's results were and all that other stuff. Well, I submit to everybody that the issue with the drones is the same thing, regardless of how you feel. And here's what I mean. I was sitting in a room listening to a couple of, well, there were three speakers and a moderator. The information of who the speakers were is on the video. So one of the speakers was sitting there telling us that in her analysis, this is a law professor, in her analysis, the rule of war and the treaties that the United States have been involved with since, let's say, World War II, actually trump the rights that are given to us as citizens in the Constitution. And I'm in a room full of lawyers and judges. So you can imagine the response as far as people coming out of their chair when that was said, because it happened with me. It's one of the reasons why I refused not to say anything. I made sure I made my point before we ended up the event. So let's just say, for example, that you supported the killing of Alawiki, I believe is how you say his name. The gentleman
Al-Alaki.
Who was the let's just say that you agree with that killing and the way it was done without due process, et cetera, because in your view, let's just say that you think it was treason and you think it was a crime and he's now an enemy combatant, et cetera. And what I offer to you to consider is that what you are agreeing to is the exact same acquiescence or agreement that you had probably with the Patriot Act that you are now railing against as such an intrusive violation because they've taken it to the level
wow. That
it's why yeah. the due process clause is so important.
Wow.
And to me, this issue is what it's all about because we absolutely have drones in this country. Rand Paul, when he did his famous filibuster that people talk about, the very next day said, I wouldn't have a problem if a guy was leaving a liquor store with a gun shooting at people for a drone to kill him. Okay, so
intellectually
the mindset is already been planted for the expansion. And whenever you see a decision, just like the DNA decision earlier this week, when you see a decision that the courts make on the basis of legitimate government interest, you need to go run and hide, you need to go stand up
yes. And
say no, 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 because that's the reasoning that they're using to allow these expansions of rights that are clear in the Constitution. So, and they've been doing it for forever. It's not like this is new. But the erosion that's happening through the Due Process Clause, to the Fourth Amendment, you know, and Maher made a good point last night, but I don't like his position. I think in reverse. Where he was saying, for example, that the people who support the Second Amendment, you know, believe it's absolute, well, then why can they talk about the Fourth Amendment? They should be able to talk about the Second Amendment. I think it's the reverse. I think we need to go back to what the damn thing says, and we need to start listening to it and give back those rights that they have obviously taken away. If you can kill American citizens because of some rule of law, and I pointed out in the hearing, one of the things I said to them, I said, you're wrong. Nothing has ever supplanted the Constitution because of the Supremacy Clause. And I'm in a room full of lawyers, and I'm just amazed that this law professor actually is trying to sell the bill of goods to us. So it's like, you know, and then the other law professor there is the one that's fighting it, and then there was a lecturer there that was also for it, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, you must think that I fell off the bus or something. I don't know, but you cannot just give away our constitutional rights, and that's what's going on here, people.
I hear you. I need to be honest here, okay? I am very mixed feelings, probably based some on maybe my ignorance of the law, maybe my ignorance of I wouldn't say ignorance of the Constitution, but my personal relationship with the Constitution isn't as strong as many as yourself, Robert, because I think you hold the Constitution probably in a lot higher regard than I do. But, I mean, I hear what you say as far as these things. But a lot of times, like Bill Maher, and, you know, Bill Maher, I know, is a comedian, but he said something yesterday that I think everybody ought to have heard when he was speaking to the Republican young lady, and it was like, I am 50-50. And what he meant by
nuke.
Is nuke. That he means...
He said nuke.
He right.
Said nuke, yes.
Right.
But
let me
interrupt you for 1 second. Let me interrupt you for 1 second, please.
Go ahead. And then,
I
want
to comment on what you... I want to comment on what you just said.
Go ahead, Robert.
You said that I hold the Constitution in higher regard than you do.
Yes.
Let me tell you what I think, how I think I hold the Constitution. I think I hold the Constitution as what we have. Not necessarily in higher regard than anybody, but it's what we have. And until we change it, or unless we change it, that's what we have. And as I've commented before, every time we get into these situations, it comes and bumps into itself. Because we're supposed to have a balanced government which ensures not only that each branch decides not to overstep their bounds, but it ensures the protections that are enumerated in the document. So all I'm saying is that, okay, the United States of America is uniquely set up by this document. It's what we have. If this is what we have, then this is what we should follow. Not that I hold it in some like some glorious regard, because I know what the situation was back then. I know who wrote it, but it is what we have. And if we are going to be a nation of laws, regardless, then let's start with the first one and work off of it instead of changing it.
Robert, you know something? What you said from a completely intellectual point of view. It has to be that way. In other words, we have a constitution, and if we are a body of laws, we have to have some baseline that we're going from. I agree with you. Unfortunately, that is not what always occurs, and not only that, as you can hear within even myself, the interpretation can be lagging. But keep your thought, please, Robert. I want to bring John back in because he's been waiting for a while. Just hang in there, and we'll be back to you. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, as much as I love everybody on the show, as much as I can sometimes agree with some people on the show, I can also disagree with people on the show. And I'm going to disagree completely with Robert right here now. Robert, you're basically saying that certain things shouldn't change and certain laws shouldn't change. You're basically saying the Second Amendment should never change. Now, I'm going to go on this notion. Militia. You're not a militia. I'm not a militia. And Egberto is not a militia. This law has been interpreted wrong by Justice Scalia to say that every American can have, therefore, a gun. The Second Amendment applies to militia. There was a militia act that was created afterwards, just right afterwards, in 1792 and finalized in 1795. And it talks about militia. So militia was like standing army kind of thing at the time. Now, of course, the things in regards to the army applies and is different today. So who is the militia today? Maybe the National Guard is the militia of today. You know, because it can be, as is under the Constitution, that the President of the United States in certain times can take over these so-called state militias. And again, it applies to the Shays Rebellion, so that therefore the President of the United States in times of tyranny can take over to apply in regards to the Second Amendment and to downput tyranny, okay? So the National Guard can be called in by the President of the United States, okay? So you're not a militia, I'm not a militia. Egberto and a bunch of people here are not a militia. We are not part of a militia, and these radicals who are out there who say that they're part of a militia, they're not part of a militia. They may think that they're part of a militia, but they're radicals.
John, I did not mean – John, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I did not – when I made that comment, see, this is why I hate raising the Second Amendment, because everybody wants to talk about only the Second Amendment. I could care less about the Second Amendment. I don't want guns in our society whatsoever. But our Constitution says in some way they are allowed. Now, I agree with you about your interpretation. If I take the words of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights as they are,
then your interpretation of the Second Amendment is just as good as my interpretation of the Due Process Clause.
No,
and,
but mine in regards to the Second Amendment
time,
is actually Second Amendment is actually perfectly correct. And Scalia is the one, and others of the Supreme Court have interpreted the Second Amendment completely wrong. We do have laws on guns. We do have laws on guns. We have plenty of laws on guns. Can we have new ones? Sure we can. The Second Amendment does not apply to gun laws that should be. And do I believe that we should have guns? Yes, absolutely. Women who need to protect themselves, who are single women in a house, should they have a gun? Yes. Should they be regulated in regards to having that gun? Absolutely.
But see, I don't disagree with you. I don't care what Scalia said. When Scalia wrote the dissent to the DNA this week, it is, and I posted it, my comment was, I don't remember the first time, I don't remember the last time I agreed with him. I'm only going to remember this time. I do not like Anthony Scalia. I do not think that his interpretation is correct. But right. As far as the interpretation of the militia is concerned, that was decided years ago by the Supreme Court correctly, in agreement with what you're saying.
How correctly?
What I said earlier was meant as you actually did kind of what I was talking about. Everybody only wants to talk about the Second Amendment when it comes to the amendment. I want to talk about the first 10 at least, the first 14 at least, with equal fervor all the time. And that's the thing that doesn't get done. And what I'm saying about the drone aspect, which is where I was going with this, because I'm talking about due process and equal protection. I could care less about the Second Amendment, to be honest with you. The only reason why it's important is because there are people walking around with guns in this society that have no business having
it. One thing you did say is that we need to revert back to it and that it shouldn't change.
Let me jump in here, John. I want to jump in, guys. Let me jump in here to say one thing, because I understand what you're saying, Robert. And I think Robert has it right here in this respect, John. Robert, is not disagreeing with what you're saying or your interpretation of the Second Amendment at all. What he's saying is that we do, however, have a document, and he's saying if we're going to live by the document, we live by the entire document, not selectively,
But Egberto, saying let's live by the Second Amendment. The militia is the National Guard of today, basically.
And nobody's disagreeing with you, John.
Right.
There was a militia act created in 1792 and finalized in 1795. And the Second Amendment doesn't apply to you and I owning a gun because I'm not a militia.
So we agree with you. Okay, and my point was exactly what you're saying.
But the problem is...
One at a time, guys.
Hold on.
One at a time. Go ahead,
Robert. What I want to know is why aren't you arguing the due process clause as feverishly as you're arguing the Second Amendment? That's my point. I want equal time for all of them. I want equal time for petitioning the government for redress grievances, which is part of Amendment 1. I want equal time for freedom of the press. I want equal time for the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I want equal time for cruel and unusual punishment. That's what I'm saying.
The Founding Fathers had the desire that they knew that things could change, and the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments could change. We see it now. The Fourth Amendment is changing completely and is being adjusted completely now.
I want to get off the Constitution right now, because we're showing differences without distinctions at this point. I mean, we're really in agreement and going over real, to put it bluntly, frivolities, my brothers. Anyhow, going back to the subject at hand, and before I say my piece, I want to go ahead and bring back in Janine. Janine, what do you think so far?
This is a lovely conversation, and I do think it's always challenging to discuss the Constitution without very specific purpose, because otherwise it's very unfocused. I agree with the notion that people sort of cherry pick the Constitution and say, I'm all about this one and we ought to eliminate these other four, with very little information. But a great example of this right now is that Jeff Merkley just submitted an amendment to the Farm Bill in the Senate that basically said states have the right to request GMO labeling on food, or to mandate GMO labeling on food.
Yeah.
And that was a Constitution-affirming amendment. In other words, the Constitution already says that states have,
right.
you know, they can
yeah.
do anything the feds say they can, except what they are specifically told they cannot do.
Right.
And this was sort of a counter maneuver because when the bill came, when the farm bill came from the House to the Senate, it included a thing called the King Amendment. And the King Amendment enters into one of those constitutional blocking amendments that says, oh, and by the way, states cannot label mandate labeling.
That is a shame. I saw that.
Right. And so, but what's interesting here is I think whenever we discuss the Constitution, we really have to look at either we become constitutional scholars ourselves, which some of us obviously here have spent good time in that, or we rely on, you know, we kind of vet those that we believe are constitutional scholars or knowledgeable and are students of the law, and then we look to them for guidance. Because I got to tell you, it took me some research to get to the heart of the matter on the difference between the Merkley Amendment and the King Amendment and what was really at stake here. And so my show was about, hey, states' rights, what happened, you guys? And the point here is, if you're just sort of a constitutional cherry picker, and if you just go, Second Amendment, I get my arsenal, and, whatever amendment, that one's passé. You know, on that level, we cannot discuss the governance of our country. And,
right.
And so I really appreciate when y'all are entering into a conversation about your personal perspectives on a morphing document that is supposed to ultimately represent the benefit or the what's before we the people. And of course, where we get dodgy about this, or where we get anxious about this, is when somehow this document that is supposed to be this shield, you know, that contains a particular kind of country, you know, that when it sort of gets penetrated by individual interests, corporate interests, global interests, which is actually people sort of, to me, collapse the distinction big business and global business, because it is really globalization, I say, that challenges our Constitution and feeds the fire for those who would have us morph the Constitution just like we morph bank regulation or other, you know, it just becomes another set of rules to make illegal legal.
Right.
And then, you know, again, I'm going back to this business strategy thing. And so I adore this conversation, and I think we need to have more like it.
Yeah, well, look, thank you, Janine. This is crazy. Now, Janine, I don't know if inadvertently brought up that subject about, I guess it has to do with Oregon, where they found, and this is interesting because I'm going to have to put a few things on speaker. Let's see. Oregon, they found, what was it, Janine? I think GMO wheat.
Right. Well, the Department of Agriculture tested and found GMO DNA, if you will, in Oregon wheat. And it immediately Japan, Korea, perhaps others, rescinded their orders. And the thing is, this GMO was by contamination. It was not by intent. And agricultural states, if you look at the family farm organizations, if you look at agricultural states, if you look at, if you go to the people that are actually personally affected by this conversation, you see a very different perspective than the one that Monsanto so effectively propagates in the media and in the state capitals and in Washington, D.C. And as a matter of fact, one of the things I found in doing my research about all this, like what's really at stake, that's what I'm always looking for, what's really at stake and therefore what's the appropriate action. And on this one, what I saw was Monsanto had actually made a statement. It had leaked or was, you know, anyway, there was a source, I believe, that basically said Monsanto has already given up at the state level. Several states have already passed laws against this, against GMO or required GMO labeling, and 25 states are considering GMO labeling laws. And so because they have surrendered at the state level, now they're going to the federal level, because the federal level can, you know, by virtue of which amendment is it? 14th, I don't remember. 10th,
right.
10th Amendment. 10th Amendment can trump that and say, no, sorry. You know, you may, your, the people of your state may be against this, but we're for it. And, or the reverse, you may be for it, but we're against it.
I know what you mean. You're talking about federalism here. Yeah.
Well, but no, actually I'm not. I wish I were. I wish I was talking about federalism. I wish I was talking about state rights. We are talking about neither. This is like the sock puppets of the conversation. What we're talking about is a global mega business who wants what it wants and will go wherever and do whatever it has to do to accomplish that. Now, we can dance around with federalism, states' rights, whatever, but the truth is they're just looking for the game they can win. And they're going to go there. And so they've virtually given up spending money on the states, and they are spending all their effort on this particular one at the federal level. That's not federalism. That is just opportunism, plain and simple. And so the more we can suss the difference between genuine conversation and disagreement among us about where to go next, right? That's an authentic conversation. But what you are getting from these global mega businesses is not authentic. It is self-serving, and that's it. End of rant.
Point.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
No. That's the rant we want, Janine. That's the rant we want. And I'm bringing in 781 right now. I think that's a new call. 781, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, my name is Kathleen.
Kathleen, how are you doing?
I'm good. I've enjoyed the show today. I've learned a lot. And
well, great.
I appreciate all
the
callers, and you know, I did have a comment on what Janine was saying as far as the labeling discussion goes. I discovered my Senator Elizabeth Warren voted against it, and I was extremely upset and disappointed because so far her track record, you know, with her standing by her word, has been excellent. And this shocked and disappointed me. So I did some research about, you know, Monsanto, DuPont, the history of GMOs, how long it's been going on that we haven't been aware of. And the other thing I was going to bring up to her is that the economic benefit of Monsanto doing this in this country and getting away with, you know, not informing the public is that when we go to export, like soybeans, for instance, the majority of them are already GMO. And the countries that purchase things from us that have banned GMOs, those are no longer a market. And
right.
From what I understand, I think it's almost two dozen countries, correct me if I'm wrong, that have banned them.
I know there
I may
several.
Be off
I mean,
on
the
that.
Article, the article with the wheat in Portland spoke of four countries, Korea, Japan, and two others I don't recall right now. But, I mean, you're so correct. These guys are actually potentially disrupting the lives of farmers for the foreseeable future.
Yes. I think the profits, though, that they foresee themselves making, you know, I see the rest of the world pursuing this and demanding that things are labeled or that they don't allow the GMOs.
Right. Kathy, let me ask you something. You were disappointed in Warren's vote, Senator Warren's vote. What did you do about it?
I called her office and
spoke
with a very nice woman and, excuse me, expressed my concerns. And she suggested I write an email to Senator Warren so she could read my thoughts.
Excellent, excellent. Now, did the senator say that she beforehand that she had not intended to support the bill?
No, she didn't. There was really little forewarning about the bill. So I never heard her speak of it.
Okay.
I only heard after the fact, after she had voted against it.
Okay.
What she voted about, just to clarify, what she voted was an amendment to the Farm Bill. And this is a constitutional affirming amendment. And so she has not voted against the Farm Bill. But one does have to ask the question, what's up when one of our nation's most, at least, you know, visible consumer advocates sort of appears to take a non-consumer stand. And what I got from her office was that the senator had hoped for better language for consumer protection, and this was not, you know, this wasn't it.
Can you tell me, Jenny, what the language actually said?
Well, in other words, this was just the Merkley Amendment says, hey, the states shall have the right. And probably wouldn't have made that amendment to the bill had the House not sent it over with the amendment saying the states shall not have the right. So it was kind of like taking a stand. Now, in the end, we'll have to see how this plays out because, of course, an amendment to the bill is not the final step. And I just thought it would have been a great shot over the bow to the House saying we're going to have to talk about this one. But it is a little surprising. I was very surprised that Senator Warren.
Well, I think this is something to pursue, guys. So, in other words, she should have voted for the Merkley Amendment, which would have said the state could, in effect, write laws banning the enforcing GMA labeling. And you're telling me that she voted that no, the states will not have that right.
Well, she voted against that amendment.
Right.
So she did not affirm the Constitution on this one.
Yeah, that's a terrible vote. That's a terrible vote. Okay, folks, we're getting ready to shut down the show. What I'm going to do is ask all of our active callers to give a closing statement, and I'll start with you, Kathleen, since you are the last one here for the call. Closing statement for the show.
I just want to thank everybody that called in and for you hosting and Janine's comments. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for calling, Kathleen. John from Joyce Z.
Hey. Glad that you're hosting the show. I just want, you know, in regards to the Second Amendment, don't want to make argument out of it. I just hope that people realize the wrong talks about it. The Second Amendment applies to militias. And a militia back in the day was like as if you were in the Knights of Columbus and you were under that so-called militia, you know? And then now it's like the National Guard. But everybody else here is not a militia. Everybody, NRA and everybody who keeps saying, well, whatever about my gun rights and this and that, Second Amendment, they're wrong. Scalia is wrong.
Thank you, John. Look here, and don't ever worry about arguments. That's how we resolve things. When we can air things out, what has happened in this country for much too long is people just keep things in. What the Coffee Party is all about is being able to bring everything out in the open, but discuss it in a manner that we can listen to each other. And I think if you listen to this show, everybody here knows I'm as liberal as they come, but I always want to hear every point of view. And like I've always said, sometimes I'm even convinced. Robert Rodrigo. Robert, are you there? Okay, I'll come back.
I'm sorry, I muted myself.
No problem, Robert. Come on in. It's a closing statement.
The thing that happened to me at the drone conference that I like the most and that I have now integrated into my life is that I belong to the American Constitutional Society for Law and Justice. And when I went to the conference, they gave us a number of items. And one of the things that they gave us was a pocket-sized Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution. And everybody should get one. And
I will
and establish the basis of what's going on and be diligent and be active. And thanks for the time.
Thank you very much, Robert. And Robert, I can almost smell a very constitutional show that's going to be entertaining in the burgeoning stage. Linda, your closing statements.
Hi. I just would like to reiterate some of the things that, like Joe Pomponio's, the National Police Force. I thought that was a. I don't want one of those either. I think that's something I want to look into a little more. And I think we should be really concerned with like the Koch brothers buying into all the major media, like the Tribune and everything, the LA Times. I have a lot of issues that I'm constantly signing petitions, calling people, and that's as far as I know, that's as much as I can do right now.
Thank you very much, Linda. All the work that you do, remember, folks, every little work that we do in this business, that's what it's all about. So hang in there, and thank you for calling, Linda. Jack Golden.
Okay. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. See, the whole damn issue is we're having problems in Congress. Okay, the Constitution is like the Bible. You have an absolutism versus relativism, I see. And right now I'm having problems with literal interpretation of the Bible. What God says and all is not what the rabbis say. Interpretation, subject to interpretation. All that stuff is literal interpretation of the Constitution. Either an absolutism,
or relativism. Okay, Jack, I'm gonna have to pull you there because. Thank you, my brother, for calling. I'm running out of time, and I need to get to Joe and Janine. So thank you for being here all the time, and I'll talk to you next week. Sounds good?
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Joe Pomponio.
Hey, brother, we had a great show. A lot of good discourse. I like that. Linda and I are on the same page with a lot of this. The large corporations, the multinationals, I think it's in Washington State or Alaska, and it's a mining company. And their operation is similar, so not dealing with GMOs, with regard to the environment. And internationally, they've been fined, sued, and done a lot of bad things. But they bought their land for this one town, and it looks like it's going to happen there. Robert, you got me going with the drones. If I tie that to an NSA that's building an $8 billion center in Utah, that's interesting. And we have a senator seeming to think it's okay to take people out with them if they're criminals.
Not good, Joe.
Not good. It's a great show.
Thank you, Joe. And I'll see you next week. And thank you for calling, my friend. And welcome back. Okay, buddy?
All right.
Janine.
Hey, all I want to say is keep the conversation alive and power to the people. You are more than you think you are.
Thank you very much, Janine. Folks, remember, we have a deal. When we get off this phone, do one thing or two things for me. Put your reps in your phone and make at least one call and let them know you are on their tail. You know what you want done, and let them know that you are a member or you're affiliated with the Coffee Party, and you mean business. Folks, remember, we have four great shows on the Coffee Party Network. On Mondays at 9 p.m., we have Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson. On Tuesdays, we have The Middle Ground with Michael Cherney and Eric Beiler at 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock p.m. on Tuesdays. On Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, you have Lunch with Loudon, that lady that just got off a few seconds ago. She has her show, Lunch with Loudon, on Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, on Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Central, you're here with me, Politics Done Right. Thank you very much for being a part of Politics Done Right. We want to keep this conversation going, but we don't want to only have a conversation. We also want to have action. We want when you leave this show, you feel empowered and you go do something. We just don't complain here. We just go do something. Please make that call, folks. Call that congressman. Put that stuff in your phone. This is Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you for spending some of your time with me on Saturday. I really do appreciate it. Wonderful weekend.
Coffee party on.